This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hi, guys. Welcome back in 4 o'clock hour here on a Black Friday edition of Dukes and Bell Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Nikhail Thomas-Mott in for Carl and Mike today as we hang out with you guys till 7 o'clock. A big college football hour coming up right now as we'll talk with Braden Gall from Athlon Sports in about 20 minutes. Also, we'll take a deeper dive on the college football playoff as well as everything Iron Bowl related, the big game, clean old-fashioned hate, all sorts of good stuff, including a Nick Saban rant. So, Tommy, we got a lot to get to in college football. But before we do, I just want to gauge your interest in this before we toss to our dog report. Any interest in the match that's going to be going on right now on TNT between DeChambeau and Koepka out in Las Vegas?
Just turned it on. I'm not even kidding. As you were talking about the guest coming up here, which I'm excited to talk about in 20 minutes, I was flipping on my Watch TNT app on my laptop. I have it pulled up right now. I'm very interested. This is going to be fun.
Okay. I mean, I any rooting interest? I personally threw a couple of bucks on Brooks Koepka at plus 105, but that's a me problem.
Yeah, I'm not a big Bryson DeChambeau guy. I've tried to be. I just think he's a little too cocky is the right word in there. I've turned into a big Brooks Koepka guy. I don't think he's going to win today. I like Bryson to win this one, but I just think it's fun. It looks like there's a good crowd there. It's at the Wynn in Las Vegas, my hometown. I think it's going to be a fun matchup.
All right, let's get to our dog report. Oh, no, did it freeze again?
There it is.
Dukes and Bell on the sidelines with the dogs.
All right, a little delayed dogs report, but we'll get to it right now. And we start off with a little clean, old-fashioned hate. Tomorrow, Georgia and Georgia Tech. The dogs stalking bigger prey, most notably Alabama. We'll get to them in a moment. But as I said earlier in the headlines in the 2 o'clock hour, Thomas, for me, if Georgia comes into this game with the right mindset, it is a rivalry game, and they handle their business in the first 30. I think they might be up 35-0 at the half, which that would mean for me, if I'm running the squad and not Kirby, I'm giving the rest of the guys the afternoon off.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm shocked that the Vegas line right now is 35. I mean, that's it for Georgia? I mean, I know it's rivalry week, but Georgia Tech is, regrettably, for all the Tech fans listening right now, nothing special. You guys know this. Like, this should easily be a Georgia rolling victory. It's amazing that we've gone through the entire year, Nick, and Georgia has not once truly been tested. Like literally once this year have they had a game where they did not win by more than 7. I guess that was the Clemson game week 1, but that was so long ago, it didn't even count. We understood how bad Clemson is now. Both teams went in opposite directions. There's no chance, though, right, that Georgia Tech makes this interesting for at least a quarter. I'm saying no, but I'm just making sure there's like a negative 1.5% chance that Georgia Tech even makes this interesting.
No contest. I think this game will be over.
I think it's impossible.
But that's, again, assuming Georgia shows up, because if they just expect to roll over, they might be looking up and all of a sudden it's 13-3 at halftime and Kirby starts throwing things and giving speeches that get leaked on social media in the locker room. But no, I would expect Georgia to win. I think this game feels to me like 55-10, 49-3, something like that.
JT Daniels, oh, sorry, I didn't mean it.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, JT Daniels is the second half intrigue right now in terms of how much playing time they're actually going to go ahead and give him. We keep talking about this week in and week out in terms of how much JT Daniels do you need to see? How much does he need to play? And I like your idea of the starters play a half. You rest it. You almost treat this like a week 17 NFL game where you already have the one seed locked up, right? You give your guys a little bit of playing time in there and then pull them out. But there's a little more intrigue for the second half because JT Daniels will get some playing time. And I think it's needed and necessary. Heaven forbid you're losing against Alabama. Need to make a change.
Yeah, no doubt. And look, you better come to play, though, because I'm looking at the Cincinnati game right now. Cincinnati is now number 4 in the country. They went right down the field on East Carolina, and they missed a field goal. And now Cincinnati's on the move, East Carolina on the move a little bit. You better show up. You better handle your business. If you do, you should roll. Let's get to the big one tomorrow. Number 2, Ohio State. Number 5, Michigan. If Jim Harbaugh is ever going to have a chance to beat the Buckeyes, this is the year. That being said, they're still a touchdown underdog at home. I'm trying not to be prisoner of the moment from last week after what I saw Ohio State do to Sparty, but I think this is a little bit of a mismatch. I'm not saying it's going to be like it was against Michigan State, but I still think the Buckeyes win by double digits in this game, Tommy.
Yeah, you know, I am not a Jim Harbaugh Michigan fan by any means, but I dislike Ohio State more. I really hope Michigan makes this a game, and I hope for just for the poor Big Blue fans out there that have literally suffered through year after year after year of Ohio State rolling them. Like, this has never been close. It's not even a rivalry. He's never actually beaten Ohio State. And I'll be honest, I would much rather see Michigan in the playoff just for the fun of it than Ohio State. I'm kind of tired of them being there, even though I know that they're better, right? They're going to win this game. They should. But for Michigan's just overall health and happiness, give them at least a competitive game here. If this is like what it was last week, like you said, against Michigan State, and you're turning the TV off after a quarter because they're getting blown out by Ohio State in the Big House, oh, man, I don't know how Harbaugh survives it. I really don't.
Yeah, I think he's had a great year. I did not expect Michigan to be in this position going into this game, but you got to find a way to win this game, Jim Harbaugh, because ultimately, in this rivalry, you're paid to beat the other team, which was John Cooper's biggest issue when he couldn't beat Michigan. And you look at this game tomorrow, and I'm just looking at it from the standpoint of speed and skill. Ohio State just recruits at like SEC level speed, and everybody else in the Big Ten looks like they're just kind of stuck in mud, and it's 1997.
Michigan has been a really, I'm actually curious. Let me ask you this. How do you view Michigan this year? Because they had a nice win against Maryland last week. They scored 59 points, but that's Maryland. We understand Maryland's no good. When you only score 21 against Penn State, and that one came down to the wire, that gives me a lot of concern that, like you mentioned, they're not going to be able to keep up with C.J. Stroud and Chris Olave and the rest of this Ohio State offense.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think Michigan's a good team. There's Georgia, and then there's a big fall off, I think, to Ohio State and Alabama in that second tier. I would argue Michigan might be in that third tier, maybe even ahead of Cincinnati. They're a good team, but you need to like show up and actually win. I think it's Ohio State has won 15 of the last 16. So if you want to call this a rivalry, that's fine, but it's been lopsided. And of course, you can hear it on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game tomorrow. It'll be Ohio State and Michigan at 12. And then after that, we will have the Iron Bowl, Alabama and Auburn. Let's get on that one, because this is, again, the theme for me, Tom. If you show up, Alabama should be fine. But the reality is this. Bama struggled against LSU. They've struggled against Arkansas. And they've lost 3 of the last 4 on the Plains. This is anything but a given, unless somehow Auburn just chokes away in the second half.
Yeah, I think Bama wins like most people do, but I would agree that this is not your Mac Jones, Devontae Smith, Alabama team that we saw last year. This is probably the weakest Bama team we've seen in a long time. And I say weak with, you know, an emphasis there, because they're not necessarily that weak. They're still a top 3 team in the college football playoff, and they should be just fine to at least be competitive against Georgia. But that would be my fear if I was Nick Saban, and we have some audio from him coming up in just a couple of minutes here. I think he's probably worried about his team looking ahead. Like, obviously, no more Bo Nix. It is the Iron Bowl, but in reality, it's a very bad Auburn team. Bama should be able to roll. Like, the focus is on Georgia. Maybe this is the week that Bama, much like the Texas A&M week, where they're looking ahead to the Tennessee matchup, the LSU matchup, whatever it was, maybe they get slow and get got a little bit early on. They'll eventually win, but if I'm Saban, I am trying to preach as hard as possible, do not let us lose this game, because you can't lose against Auburn and beat Georgia and still go to the SEC and still go to the playoff, in my opinion. A 2-loss Bama team really is not going to be able to get in.
Yeah, I would be stunned if a 2-loss Bama team got in, whether they're the 4 best teams in the country or not, if the committee's just like, man, we can't let Bama in. The outrage, the national people will lose their mind on social media. There's a Bama bias. But speaking of Bama and Saban, because, you know, it's gotten to a point where when Alabama's favored by 20 and they win by 7, it feels like a loss. Well, Nick Saban on his weekly radio show is done hearing about it.
Rat poison is rat poison, and the media is always going to create it. But the reality of the world is not what you read on the internet. It's not what somebody thinks. It's not what somebody's opinion is. It's not what the line is on the game. And it's certainly the biggest one is every time a team loses two games, everybody says that team's like done. And it's really just the opposite. Like Texas A&M lost two games before we played. I said it's a dangerous team. Right, because these guys have pride in performance. They want to have a good team. They've had two disappointing losses. That makes them dangerous. They're humiliated by what's happened the last two games. Right, same thing when we played LSU. Everybody says, oh, they lost two games in a row. They're not any good anymore. Right, we're just going to blow them out. It's just the opposite. It's just the opposite of that. Right, they're competitors. They have moms and dads. They have pride in performance. They have things that they want to accomplish and they want to do, and they want to be good. They don't just throw in the towel. They work harder to try to get better. And everybody wants to beat us. So we're going to get everybody's best game. And I don't know why people can't understand that. You could say it's not fair to our players that they get everybody's best game. But they do. And they have to be able to compete through that and play over that. And you know, it's. I don't know. I mean, when I came here, everybody was happy to win a game. Now we're not happy to win a game anymore. We're not happy to win a game at all. We think we should win games by whatever. And I don't think that's fair to the players either. Because our players work their butt off to be the best that they can be. And to get criticized for what they work hard for to do so that you can be entertained. So that you can enjoy and have pride and passion for what they accomplish and what they do. And they're not perfect. They're just college students. They're going to they go to school every day. They got to study. They have to run extra after practice when they miss study hall. I mean, come on. Give me a break. This is not professional football. These guys aren't getting paid to play here. They're representing you all. You should be proud and happy to support them and appreciate what they do and have some gratitude. And you know what else? Nobody wants to win worse than they do. Not me, not you. I don't care what kind of fan you are. Nobody wants to win more than the players that play. Nobody.
Tommy, you know what he's doing, right? You know what he's doing there? He is talking to his team. He is getting their back. And I'm telling you, when the Iron Bowl is over, if they beat Auburn on the road, he is going to be pumping it to his players for a week straight that nobody thinks you can beat the Georgia Bulldogs. He is playing the psychology game right now and making his team feel like an underdog.
Well, and he's right to do so. He's 100% right to do so because his team should be able to beat the Georgia Bulldogs. How often has a Nick Saban team been a genuine underdog?
Yeah.
Like, seriously, like a genuine underdog in the college football playoff or just even an SEC title game. You haven't had it for years. So you get that manufactured hype or that manufactured little kick in the pants for that game. But when it comes to the Georgia game, he's going to be manufacturing it for real because they're definitely going to be underdogs. And he needs his team to play a lot better than they have at times this year in order to have a chance against Kirby Smart's defense, which you and I both would probably agree that he doesn't really have one.
Very true.
It'll be interesting. Going to be interesting. Can't wait for the SEC title game. Got to take care of Georgia Tech first here. And we, of course, got to take care of a really interesting interview coming up in the next 6 minutes. Braden Gall from ESPN Radio 104.5 The Zone as well is going to come on and talk all things college football, not just Georgia and Alabama, the rest of the college football playoff landscape as well. As it's interesting, after, let's say, Ohio State sitting there at number three, right? Who's number four? Are there some teams on the outside looking in that have a chance to go ahead and make the playoff? We'll talk to Braden coming up here in about 6 minutes. Sports Radio. Now, that's the game. Carl and Mike out for the day. Thomas and Nick in here rolling with you guys till 7 p.m. on the East Coast.
All right, guys, welcome back in. Black Friday edition of Dukes and Bell here on a Friday. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Nick Cale, Thomas Mott in for Carl and Mike today. As we roll till 7 o'clock, we'll get you set for Hawks and the Grizzlies tonight. Trae Young, Ja Morant in Memphis. But right now, we're talking college football here in the 4 o'clock hour. We'll get into the college football playoff and the rankings coming up in about 20 minutes. But right now, we go out to the WadeFord.com hotline, Atlanta's Ford dealer. Welcome in my buddy, Braden Gall. You can catch him on the Athlon Sports Cover 2 podcast, on ESPN Radio, and also on 104.5 The Zone in Nashville, Tennessee. BG, happy Thanksgiving. How you doing, bud?
Happy Thanksgiving, buddy. How are you, man? Good to talk to you.
I'm doing good. I'm curious, and I do want to talk on the field stuff, but I want to start with all the vacancies, whether it's USC or LSU or Florida. I'm curious, how do you rank those openings if you are one of those coaches that might be in position for one or multiple spots?
How much do you enjoy pain, Nick?
I love it. I'm a glutton for punishment.
That is the question. Like, if you're okay living in the fishbowl and having to recruit like a total gangster and compete against Nick Saban and Kirby Smart, then LSU and Florida is your bag. And LSU's the best job. All three of the last coaches have won national championships. They hire guys who are sitting Power 5 coaches. That's what they do and turn them into national champions. So LSU's clearly the best job. Now, you can do just as much at Florida. I just think their roster is not as in good a shape. They're going to have to recruit because Dan Mullen hates recruiting, and he didn't recruit and didn't develop as many players as you would imagine. So USC, it's all about, do you like being on the West Coast? Do you like being the third most important football team in your city behind the Chargers and Rams? Like, the Lakers might be a bigger deal in that market than USC, but it is the best job on the West Coast, and you can sort of be the biggest dog on your half of the country if you want to be USC. We've seen that with Pete Carroll. So if Miami comes open, that's intriguing, which it should come open. That throws a big wrench into it all. Washington's a very good job. Virginia Tech next, and then probably TCU near the bottom of that list. So again, if you want to try your hand at the SEC and you don't mind getting fired in 3 years and living that buyout life, I mean, the SEC is your place to be, man.
Brandon, I'm very curious your thoughts on some of these current head coaches turning down possible interviews with some of the big name places. Obviously, my alma mater Baylor has Dave Aranda, who's about to sign a brand new contract. He was rumored to be in the LSU mix, the USC mix. Luke Fickell out of Cincinnati also staying put there as well. Do you think that they're going to have a hard time filling these jobs with big names that we would expect in the past? Or do you think that just a matter of time before some big name guy at a smaller school is going to make the jump up there to the Floridas and the LSUs of the world?
I mean, that's sort of like the million-dollar question, and it's really hard to define and answer. Like, are there just not any big-name coaches out there because Bob Stoops and Urban Meyer aren't really candidates, right? Those are huge names. I mean, is Lincoln Riley – like, again, how many coaches can you say right now that you could hire anywhere in America that would be able to recruit with Nick Saban, Kirby Smart, Jimbo Fisher, let's say Dabo in his heyday? Like, who is that person? Like, Texas just hired Steve Sarkisian. who are those people? Like, and with all due respect to Luke Fickell and Matt Campbell and Jeff Hafley at Boston College and, like, Dave Clawson at Wake Forest, there's a ton of great coaches, but those guys aren't going to come to the SEC and recruit. Like, Billy Napier's probably the only Group of Five coach that has, like, you have to recruit at an elite level to compete in this conference. You've got to, and LSU can do it, Tennessee can do it, Georgia, Alabama, A&M, Auburn, Florida. Like, there's half the league can do it, the other half can't. And the reason that you see Ole Miss and Mississippi State and Arkansas in the top 25 in the SEC is because these are extremely coveted jobs, because you can get players, but you have to get the players to be good. And that's why Lane Kiffin, you know, Mike Leach, and Sam Pittman are able to show us that you can win at these programs, not championships like Florida and LSU. But I don't think, like, Luke Fickell, like, those are a lot of I can name you 10 dozen or 10 different really good college football coaches. And not those, what we're learning is you just have to have a different skill set in the SEC. And those guys are ball coaches, and they don't want to be down here where you got to, you know, you got to play the game in recruiting. And so there's just not many of those guys left. I think there's a lot of good guys that can go out to USC and win, Washington and win. You can be a good ball coach and win there. You have to have other skills to succeed at LSU and Florida. And I just don't see, like, there's just not many people cut from that cloth that can do it at this level. That's just sort of, it's kind of the SEC's own fault, to be honest.
Braden Gall, Athlon Sports Cover 2 Podcast, ESPN Radio, and 104.5 The Zone joining us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. So, you know, I'm a Bama fan, but, like, I'm just watching and I'm looking at these rankings, and, you know, I take them with a grain of salt because I know we've got head-to-head matchups that are going to dictate a lot of this, and, you know, it'll settle itself. But I'm totally on board with Ohio State at two. I think they're the better football team than Alabama. Do you agree with that?
No, but I don't think it matters. I mean, I think if they played head-to-head, I would pick Alabama to win because I think Will Anderson would win three Heismans that day. But I think they're basically – I mean, they're basically the same. It's the best offense in America at Ohio State. I think Bryce Young's actually undervalued, to be honest. This is the worst Alabama offensive line and running game we've seen in 10 years, and that actually is putting more – like third and four for Alabama is a Bryce Young down, not a running down, and it used to be a running down at Alabama, even when they were running the spread – they still would be able to knock you in the face on third and four. And now it's about Bryce Young making a play with his arm. So I do think Bryce Young actually deserves more credit than he's getting, which is kind of a strange thing to say. But they're about the same, and I don't think either one of them has a prayer against Georgia. So they're both very good. I don't really – it doesn't matter if they're two or three. What matters is what happens around the country. Is there a two-loss Big 12 champion? You know, is two-loss Alabama viewed this better as Notre Dame? I would say yes, they'd be viewed as, you know, better than Notre Dame. Cincinnati might already have a spot locked in. If you give Georgia and Ohio State two spots, you still have room for Bama. So a lot of it depends on how they look against Auburn tomorrow and how they look against Georgia on next weekend. You look at those two games and their only losses on the road against the top 15 A&M team by 3 points. Like, how do you not argue that they're still not one of the best four teams if your argument is like Baylor, Oregon, and Notre Dame? You bet I'm going to vote for Alabama. So I still think they can get in, but I'm okay with Ohio State at two. I'd like to see the best offense in America go against the best defense in America, and we're probably going to see it. I just don't think anyone has a chance to beat Georgia.
You mentioned Cincinnati being locked in there almost at four. They just got to kind of take care of business right now. And speaking of take care of business, they're down 3-0 end of the first against Eastern Carolina right now on ABC. Where are you at on Cincinnati, just as a whole? Do you think that they deserve to be there based on their record? Do you think that they can actually be competitive maybe in a college football playoff game? What's your take right now on the Bearcats?
I mean, not as a four seed against Georgia. And I know before everyone yells at me and tweets at me like, oh, they played in the bowl game last year. Well, like, none of the best players played for either team, frankly. And Cincinnati lost. I'll give them credit for that performance. But, like, bowl games are largely irrelevant because they just don't look like real football games. They're not coached like real football games. There's a different – like, I personally – I'm sorry. You cannot rattle off a schedule of – Temple, East Carolina, Tulane, Tulsa, SMU, and tell me Navy, and tell me that that's the same thing as even what Oklahoma State has done, or even and Notre Dame's schedule is like way down from what it normally would look like. Like, every one of those teams that Notre Dame has beaten that's supposedly a good team normally, USC, Stanford, Navy, North Carolina, Virginia Tech, like, they're all worse than we expected. Some of those teams have, like, fired coaches. So, like, Notre Dame's schedule isn't particularly great. How can you argue Cincinnati's is? But I think Cincinnati's – it's one of those years where you just go, you know what? Everyone else is two losses. They're undefeated. Fine, group of five. Here's your invite to the dance. Let's see what you really think about it when you have to play number one Georgia in a college football semifinal when it's no longer, you know, with all due respect to, like, the Peach Bowl and the Cotton Bowl, like – just regular old New Year's Six bowls. Like, let's see what it actually looks like when you're playing in a playoff game with a national championship on the line against a team with 22 NFL players. Like, let's see what you can do. So be careful what you wish for there, but this might be the year they deserve it because they're pretty darn good. They have a win over top 10 Notre Dame, and, you know, nobody else really in college football wants it. Everybody else is down this year. So let's give them a shot. Let's see what it looks like. And, you know, got thoughts and prayers, Luke Fickell in Cincinnati. Maybe you should take a job.
All right, Braden, let me hit you with this one on the final one. Scenario time. Let's say Georgia's undefeated. They beat Alabama by 3 to 7 points. It's a good game. They win by single digits, not a double-digit victory. Georgia's in. Let's say Ohio State handles their business against Michigan, and they win the Big 12 championship. They're in. Cincinnati's undefeated. Let's just say they're in for the sake of conversation. If Alabama loses by 7, but Oklahoma State beats Oklahoma in Bedlam and wins the Big 12 championship, are we going one loss Big 12 Oklahoma State or two loss Alabama, assuming Bama's got a 3 to 7 point loss?
I mean, my head tells me that Alabama's the better team. If you lose by less than 10 points to Georgia, you will have played Georgia better than any other team by a large margin. So So it means if anything, it proves that you belong on the tier with Georgia. Again, I think the committee takes close losses into account very seriously, as they should, because not everybody plays as teams like that. No one else in America has to play Georgia in the last game of the season. Why does Alabama get punished for that? So the rematch I don't care about. That is the only scenario in which I see someone maybe being more worthy than a two-loss Alabama team in that case is Oklahoma State. Their defense is one of the top defenses in the entire country. They've gone on the road and dominated people. They've had total control at home. They will have wins over Oklahoma, Baylor twice. Their only loss was to a really good, a pretty decent Iowa State team by one score. Like, there's no bad loss there. Oklahoma State has by far the best case in that scenario you're laying out, because the Big Ten champ is in, Georgia's in, as long as they don't lose to Georgia Tech, which won't happen. And then you have basically it's Cincinnati, two-loss Bama, and Oklahoma State. Because I don't include Notre Dame in that conversation, because I think Cincinnati deserves to be ahead of Notre Dame. So I think if you look at those three, and you got two spots. So, I mean, that I think is the toughest decision. If Oklahoma wins, the committee has clearly shown us Oklahoma could still be a one-loss champion, and that's a heck of an accomplishment. The committee has shown us they have no respect for Oklahoma.
Yeah.
So if Oklahoma's a one-loss team, even with good wins down the stretch here over top 10 teams, I don't know how they jump Alabama. So it's all about how the committee views two losses, and are they willing to break precedent? Like, who cares? Expansion's coming. Let's put a group of five team in and a two-loss team in. Who cares? Let's have a good time.
Braden Gall, Athlon Sports, ESPN Radio. Great stuff, man. Thank you.
Always a pleasure, guys. Happy Thanksgiving.
You got it. Braden joining us here on the WadeFord.com hotline, Atlanta's Ford dealer. We'll come back. We'll get to the college football playoff conversation on the other side, the top four. And also, is it a foregone conclusion that Georgia would smash Bama and Ohio State? Braden seems to think so. We'll delve into that next. All right, guys, welcome back in. Dukes and Bell here on a Black Friday edition of the show. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app. Nick Kale, Thomas Mott in for Carl and Mike today as we roll till 7 o'clock. 1 hour from now, another installment of Guy Talk. And coming up in less than 20 minutes, it is our Falcons report as the Falcons get ready for the Jaguars Sunday in Jacksonville. All right, Tom, I thought it was interesting, and, you know, I think a lot of people locally would probably echo this sentiment, but sometimes nationally when you hear it so adamantly, it makes you, you know, your ears perk up a little bit. But Braden Gall, who was on with us last segment, saying he don't think Alabama or Ohio State stand a chance against the Georgia Bulldogs.
Yeah, I found that interesting. Now, obviously, if you watch Georgia play at all this year, you can see where he's coming from, because there hasn't been a team to really compete against Georgia from an offensive perspective the entire year. But we're talking about two completely different offenses than anything Georgia has faced. I mean, I'm not going to say that Georgia would lose that game against Ohio State or Alabama. I think that they obviously would win, but it's going to be a 14-point win at the most, maybe a 17-point win. Like, there just hasn't been an offense comparable to Bryce Young at Alabama. And Braden's right, it's not the best Alabama offense we've seen in a while, but Bryce Young is still very good. And then the best offense in the land right now is C.J. Stroud and Ohio State. I mean, go back and watch the Michigan film, Michigan State film last week. They rolled what was thought to be a pretty decent Michigan State football team. There's been no offense, like I said, that could even come close to being decent that has played the Georgia Bulldogs so far this year. Maybe Kentucky is the best one they faced out of the entire group. I still like the idea that Georgia's going to win that game, but I don't know if it's going to be not even close, as Braden just said.
But, I mean, here's the thing, and right now, gun to my head, and I've said it for a while, I would take Georgia over Bama, Georgia mm-hmm. over Ohio State. I think Georgia can beat Alabama by 10 points. But let's look at it this way. So Ohio State, arguably the best offense in college football, Alabama right behind them. Georgia's offense has been good, but they're not a juggernaut because they play a different style of ball. Now, defensively, Georgia's defense is legendary. But so let's say Alabama or Ohio State, and we know Alabama's going to play Georgia in 2 weeks. If Alabama can get to 24 points, I mean, that probably would be a nail-biter, a sweat for Georgia, because if Bama can get to 24, you know, that game feels like 27-24, 28-24, 30-24. I mean, I'm on the side of, I think Georgia's hands down the best, but if Bama gets into the mid to high 20s,
that's going to be a ball game.
I totally agree. And no one's even come close to getting it to 24, except for I think it was Tennessee who got to 17, is the closest that anyone's been with Georgia. And I think that's kind of the big final question mark for the Dogs, right? It's not, is this defense elite? Is the offense good enough to score? It's, what does this team look like in a close football game? Because we just haven't seen it at all. You're not going to see it tomorrow with Georgia Tech. That'll be a 35 to 50 point blowout, whatever the number is. But what will it look like if Bama is able to get to 24? Or what will it look like if Georgia is trailing by 3 or by 7 after the first quarter or the first half? Like, this is unknown territory, uncharted waters that Georgia hasn't even, they haven't even been close to being at this point, Nick. Like, it's not even, it's not like, oh, well, you know, a couple of weeks ago they won by 12 or won by 13 and it was a little scary, but not really. No. Like, besides Clemson week one, which I don't even count as a game on their schedule because
that
of how
like
different
it was
the two teams
years
are.
Ago, doesn't it?
Yes. Doesn't count at all. Besides that game, they have not even had to sweat at all in any of these games after maybe, you know, 2 minutes to go in the first quarter. What would they look like if it gets a little bit close? Then you got to kind of figure, it's up to Kirby Smart to make sure that he rallies the troops and gets them over the hump.
All right, speaking of Kirby Smart, let's get to one little piece of audio from the head coach of the Georgia Bulldogs, because Kirby Smart was asked about Dan Mullen being fired in Florida.
At the end of the day, I hate it for Dan because I think Dan's a good person, and it's a tough situation. But it's a profession we chose to be in, and I know Dan will be fine. He'll be perfectly fine.
Dan Mullen going to be living that buyout life. Now, here's the thing, Tom. And we had Braden on last segment, and we were talking about these vacancies and these best jobs. Let me throw this theory by you. So you have USC open, you have LSU, you have Florida, and you could very well have Miami. If I am Lane Kiffin or Billy Napier or any of these coaches that are, you know, labeled and rumored to be going to this place or that place, I look at it this way. I would go either to Miami or USC first. And I'm not disagreeing with Braden about LSU. It is the best job. But for me, if it's about a team that has the resources and it's the path of least resistance to win a national championship or get to a playoff, I would rather go to USC, where I know I could own the Pacific time zone. I would rather go to Miami, where the only resistance I'm going to have is Dabo Swinney in an ACC championship. Now, if I go Florida or LSU, if I go to Florida, I got to deal with Kirby just to win the East. And if I go to LSU, I got to deal with Saban and Alabama to win the West, and also Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M. So that's kind of the way I would view it, as far as if it's about the opportunity to win and the path of least resistance. I think LSU and Florida are tougher, considering Kirby and Nick have a stranglehold on their respective divisions.
I couldn't agree more, but I do think one thing that very few people are talking about when it comes to coaching searches is the change coming in college football, and that's the 12-team playoff.
True.
Right? When the 12-team playoff comes, you no longer have to be in the SEC, or no longer have to be at USC, or, you know, be over down there at a big-time national powerhouse that has name recognition and TV credit in terms of actual viewing numbers in order to get into the college football playoff. I thought it was absolutely fascinating this past week. My alma mater at Baylor, they have Dave Aranda, who was one of the hot names, right? He has going to have a double-digit win year at Baylor. He has a chance to go to a Big 12 title game. And they all said LSU or USC, like they're going to go ahead and get him. And he just this past week said, no, I'm staying at Baylor. And people were like, wait, why? Well, because now if you're in the top 12 in the college football playoff rankings, you're going to have a shot to go to a national championship. Now, whether the 12th best team or the 8th best team or the 6th best team can actually win enough games to go all the way is yet to be seen. But you no longer have to be at Ohio State, Bama, Clemson, Oklahoma, Georgia, or Alabama really to have a chance to go. I mean, I think this is opening up the flexibility of coaches not having to only go to the SEC or only go to a big name school. And so guys are saying, hey, I can win at Iowa State. I can win at Cincinnati. I can win at Baylor. And I can stay put, like you mentioned, at a Miami, or go down up to a USC that's been struggling in the past and not have to worry about, oh, well, what if I'm a one-loss USC Pac-12 champ? Will they still put me in over a one-loss SEC, you know, title game loser? I think it's about to open up a crazy time in college football for these coaches who are trying to climb the ladder to get to programs that can be competitive for a playoff, because now so many more teams are going to have that ability and option.
Yeah, and you know, you look at some of these names, right? Whether it's Florida, LSU, USC, TCU, Virginia Tech, Washington, Washington State, and then you start looking at some of the names. Billy Napier, Matt Campbell, Sonny Dykes, Kyle Whittingham, Jamie Chadwell, Joe Moorhead, Jay Norvell. You know, it feels to me like Lane Kiffin should be the guy to get the first crack. Like, if you're Lane Kiffin, it's never going to be juicier than it is this year. USC, granted, you've been there. LSU, Florida, Miami. Like, Lane Kiffin should have his pick, and yet it doesn't feel like we're hearing much chatter about Lane Kiffin. Is he really going to stay at Ole Miss?
I think he is. I mean, wow. I think for the reasons that I just mentioned, he understands that he doesn't have to be at LSU in order to go to a playoff. Like, Ole Miss, right now, if this was, you know, the 12-team playoff, they're probably in. Like, I mean, they're sitting there at 9 right now, and they look good, and they've been there crack at Bama maybe, and, you know, the first or second or third round of a college football playoff. I think he likes it down there at Ole Miss. I think that it's a lot less pressure than going to LSU and Florida, for instance. Like, I think that's the big factor here is the pressure you get being the head coach of the University of Florida, USC, and LSU. I mean, it's a different level right now, Nick.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. A lot of college football to get to for sure. We got a big 5 o'clock hour, though, coming up, Tommy.
I'm looking forward to the Falcons report coming up here in really right about 6 minutes. Cordell Patterson got an update on him, as well as Jalen Hawkins. Looks like he's going to play as well. Keys to the game. Like, what do we do to not have a third straight embarrassing loss against the 2-win Jaguars? I don't know. We'll find out coming up here. We roll into the 5 o'clock hour. Dukes and Bell, Thomas and Nick in for Mike and Carl on Sports Radio 92 of the game. Make sure you're live in your pocket on the Odyssey app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.